Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today.
It's the 13th of June, 2024. June is almost over. That means the year is half over. That means it's halfway to 2025, which means it's almost time to start thinking about Christmas. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media and Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls.
But hey, everybody.
It is actually time to start thinking about Christmas and about the autumn sales and about, you know, the turnover from summer, because it's all happening so fast. This is the web world that we work in. How you doing this week, Christine?
I'm good. I'm tired. You know what I found out this week? And we'll talk about it another time, because we're going to have Bill Hartzer on the show. Someone stole my domain name right out of my account. Yeah.
Which domain name?
The Sites Without Walls. My main domain. Now, I don't have websites on these. I just hold them for easy for mail and stuff. But a client told me that my site was being held by somebody in Indonesia. I was like, what? And I went and looked, and Bill Hartzer looked at it for me, and it was definitely stolen out of my account. So he's going to help me get it back. And we're going to have him on one day to talk about fairly soon about how these things can happen to you.
Well, hey, that's actually, you know, I knew Bill was coming on sometime in the future. That you got ripped off is news to me. That's horrible. But if anyone's going to be able to help you out, it's definitely Bill.
Exactly. I feel pretty confident Bill can help me get it back. So, but it just, I've read Bill's posts about people stealing domains, and I never thought I had an issue. I had all the protections on, but they managed to somehow steal it, and they didn't hack my account. I'm not sure how they got in there, because everything else is there. They just took the two, but somehow they managed to grab the two domains.
Well, it's an object lesson that the web is a wild place and security is paramount, and we're always one step behind the most creative of the bad guys, because they're all the creators.
Right? And at least we'll have Bill on to help us sort out that all out. People might not know they need to be interested in this topic, but you do.
Yeah.
Like I said, my client was like, why is your site in Indonesia? A little embarrassing with a new client. So
okay, so it has been every week, if it hadn't been for the last couple of months, this would have been a wild week in search. But it's actually been kind of a mundane week in search.
Yeah.
Relative to how crazy the last few weeks have been.
Exactly.
But a hell of a lot has happened this week. We're going to try to get as many stories in as possible. We're going to try to, you know, to keep it light and funny, informative and actionable as much as possible, but sometimes Google makes it awfully hard. I'm going to start with some Google stuff. First of all, and I'm going to try to structure this so it's like one contiguous story, because they all sort of touch on the same thing. Google responded to the leak, the quote-unquote the leak, otherwise known as much ado about something, but we're not sure what. The leak. So Danny Sullivan, search liaison, gave made a number of comments about questions about signals and elements and stuff that were mentioned in the leak, and it all really comes down to, you don't know where the individual APIs, the 2,500 or so of them. Danny did his best this week to try to explain how Google uses so many different systems and processes and analyses to figure out what people mean by search queries, and then meet the search query as they understand the person intended it. And it just sort of ended up getting kind of jumbled and stuff. And it sounded like he wasn't saying anything when I think he was really trying to explain something, but like the person who has almost everything but doesn't quite have the salient details couldn't
it's
actually
like
explain it.
It's like when your friend tells you like this big juicy thing and they're like, but you can't say anything to your other friend. And you're talking to your other friend and you're like, I really need to let him know. I can't say anything. I can't let him know the other person told me. I can't give him any details, but somehow I got to let him know. That's kind of what it was like. Like he's like pointing at the relevance of content page from the Wayback Machine to show that it's been there since 2019. And he said, beyond looking at keywords, our system also analyzed if content is relevant to the query in other ways. We use aggregated and anonymized interaction data to assess whether search results are relevant to queries. We transform that data into signals that help our machine learning systems better estimate relevance. Just think, when you search for dogs, you don't likely get a page with the word dogs on it 100 times, although you used to years ago. With that in mind, algorithms assess if a page contains other relevant content beyond the keyword dogs, such as pictures of dogs, videos of dogs, or even lists of breeds. Basically, are other things on your page matching your keyword to show that the key, that's the keyword for the page? But what he was basically talking about was a question, and it's talked about later in this article that we're using today from Barry Schwartz, about NavBoost. And NavBoost, I spent all last Friday reading the DOJ testimony about NavBoost from Paul, I believe it was Paul Harwis on the stand. I'm not 100% sure about that though. But basically, NavBoost does use click and user interactions, but it uses it in a culling process and to create data sets. So what it does is Google gets like thousands of documents related to a query, maybe 10,000 in the article, in the testimony. It's like maybe 10,000. He's just, you know, just generalizing. And then he goes, and then we use NavBoost to narrow it down to maybe a few hundred. And then we use the scoring and everything else to make a search results out of that, right? So NavBoost retains, at one time it retained 18 months of clicks and user data. Then it went down to 13 months. That was a huge change for them. They didn't think 13 months would be long enough to help them get this culled sort order, these hundreds of pages. But they're not the only thing they use, because then, as they said in the testimony, this isn't from Danny, but Danny says this too, there'd be pages that would never be found because they don't have any clicks because they're new, or maybe they're just not commonly found, you know, through search. So this NavBoost is where this big controversy over clicks and user interactions comes from, because we have people in the industry like Brand who say they've mattered, and Google saying they don't in the final sort order. But if you go to the DOJ testimony, which is under oath and being, you know, like very, it's a lot of detailed information in there. It isn't used in the final sort order. It is only used to cull the last pages or to create a data slice for like say local.
So just so like I understand it, click and user interaction data might be used to better understand what the document's about. Like you said, slice it into local or a different form of search result. Or it might be used to do that initial cull down from like thousands of documents to a few hundred that they can algorithmize into the correct order.
Yes, and it has an associated process called GLUE, which I haven't seen anyone talk about. So I don't think many people have read the DOJ testimony, because it's talked about all the time with NavBoost, although they're not really super clear on what it is. As part of one of the things they're probably trying to keep to close to the vest. But yeah, basically that's what it's for. That's what NavBoost does. So a lot of people think NavBoost is like, because Paul Haar said in his resume, which now has been taken offline since it was mentioned last week on LinkedIn, it's not there anymore. Said in his resume, he worked on a project, and this was the greatest ranking signal ever, but it wasn't really a ranking signal. It was a culling process, but that does make it massive, because that culling process uses those clicks and user interactions to try to pull in stuff that's been clicked on over the last 18 months at the time.
And I'm pretty sure everybody who's listening thinking, I would know which side of the culling process I want to be on.
Right, right.
There's an importance there somewhere.
There is, but I don't know that we have a whole lot of, you know, it looks like it's mostly based on, you know, content relevance and previous engagement, but not previous engagement. You can game, I guess, unless you have like a team of people sitting there all day, every day, because it's over a long period of time. So if there's like gaps in the data, it would, you know, look manipulated, or they wouldn't count it. And like I said, there's also other processes in there. Danny mentions it here, and so does the person being interviewed in court under oath. says that there's a bunch of other processes involved too, because they couldn't just use this as a signal, because there'd be pages, new sites would never rank for anything.
Well, indeed, yeah, that first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah, and Danny specifically mentions that in the article here, where he talks about, you know, that nobody would be able to rank if they hadn't been clicked on before. And most of the people he's talking to here are talking about the HCU and its supposed relation to the HCU. That's why I tell people they have to, and I know you've done this too, Jim, is just be really careful about what people are saying, because this is also coming out of the leaked documents. If you really want to read something interesting, go get the DOJ testimony, you know, that like talks about this stuff. NavBoost is on page, starts on page 11, and I know it goes for at least 10 or 15 more pages of testimony where they're just talking about NavBoost and how it works. So I remember this is from 2005 is when NavBoost originated, and it changed again around 2018. So we don't know that the one that's working today is the same one that they're talking about, because the DOJ testimony was in 2017, 2018.
Well, but, that's another point I really want to make, actually. Yeah. This has been driving me crazy through this whole leak debate. I've been doing SEO for 20 years, and there was stuff I advised 20 years ago that there's absolutely no way you do today. There's no way you do it today, because it was kindergarten. It's kindergarten stuff today. But, you know, 20 years ago, this was where were you? 25 years ago, we'd make a unique page for every unique search engine.
We would
never do that today. No way you'd tell somebody to do that today. That'd be just absurd.
Now. We had like 5 or 6 back then. But also you could do white and white text, and you would rank really well. So, actually,
you could do that for about a year, and then they hammered you bad for it. Legos was getting you for that.
That's true, but I'm talking about like very early days, you know, people are making millions and millions of dollars off of PPC.
But the point is, these days, things change so rapidly that information we were giving out in, say, 2014, 10 years ago, 2017, 7 years ago, or even 2020, which, believe it or not, was only 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Is
a lot's changed.
And so, because, like, as you said, the testimony from 2017, processes of 2017, and the trial in 2018, 2019, a lot of that stuff is probably out of date. The APIs, the 2500 APIs, some of them have been, 2019 was a date on some of them.
Oh, well, also, a lot of them are just G-plus mentions. Stuff. I mean, there's stuff that's so old in there that, well, I mean, G-plus stopped in 2018.
And that's the other thing that's important to mention. Google is like a Swiss watch. It's got a gajillion moving pieces.
Yes.
And not all of those pieces are public-facing. And sometimes those pieces need to interact with each other. Now, do you remember like when you get a cell phone and the cell phone asks for permissions to do a bunch of different things in your initial days? Different programs want to use your microphone and have access to all your photos and have access to your to your camera as well? It's not that they want to turn these functions on and off in a malicious way. It's just that they actually need to have access to them to function properly.
Yes.
A lot of the APIs, I think, in the leak are exactly like that. Many of them may pertain to how Google Calendar works, for instance.
That's
to be complicated, how Google Calendar works.
And that's in there. So is Google Call, so is Google Email app notifications, because I have the whole raw dump, so I'm not working off other people's interpretations. So there's a lot in there. Also, something that's really important to mention, too, is in the DOJ docs, unfortunately, most people only saw slide number one on the quick data stuff. It says we use clicks and user engagement, basically, on the slide. By the way, if you've never seen the slides, you have to see the slides. These are Google slides, and they look like they're done with Microsoft Paint. But anyway, so I just think that's funny, because they have the best designers in the world. They look like they're done with Paint. But they say, like, they can't understand body text, right? So I see a lot of people mentioning, oh, Google can't interpret body text that well. Back then, remember how a title tag before 2017-18, how a title tag could make or break an entire, like, where it showed up in the search results? Mm-hmm. And how many variations you had to have, because ED mattered, S mattered, ING mattered, right? Well, but around 2018, they started rolling out the machine learning, the natural language understanding, and now the natural language processing, where they are understanding what is in the sentence. Like, I don't mean human understanding, but computer understanding. So they can use the body text now to match relevancy. And so the title tag became diminished. It still is vital, but it's not vital like it was. Like, you don't worry about title tags like you used to in 2000, let's say 15, right?
I don't obsess on them, but I'm still pretty concerned about them. Title tags got power.
They do have power, but remember back like 2010, like you obsessed over it. You
well, make yeah, little indeed. Changes, although, the whole thing. Although I still want them done a certain way because they tell a certain story. I'm really into a hierarchy of information on the page, and that's still important.
It's very important, but I'm just saying, I'm just talking about the documents themselves. So basically, before like 2017-18, when BERT was the big, when BERT got launched, you know, the titles, H1s, descriptions, all that were super, super, URLs were super, super important. So, because that's all they really understood on the page, right? Image names, maybe. But then they started being able to understand language on the page and text on the page and content on the page. And so they diminished. They're not gone and they still have value. They're not as impactful as they used to be. And so when people read these documents and they're reading this leak and all these other things, you have to remember, the thing that you're reading, when did it exist? Right? Like, when did it happen? I see people mentioning author. I've searched the documents for author, authorship, anything related to author. There's only like two mentions, and they're both related to microblogs. I bet most people today don't even know what a microblog is. Right? Microblogs were like, oh gosh, what's the site that never made it that tried to so popular and still exists? And I'm always surprised they still exist. Starts with T.
Twitter?
No, Tumblr? Oh. Is it Tumblr? Tumblr, right? It feels like the wrong word. Tumblr? Anyway, there were microblogs were like sites that were just basically Twitter was considered a microblog site. So when the author's in there, they're either talking about linking to the author in one or they're talking about microblogs. And both of these are circa pre-2015, right? So when people look at this stuff, I see a lot of proclamations made, and it's like, but when was this we don't even know when the call's from, because G Plus died in 2018. There's literally nothing in algorithms about G Plus, but they're in there, and they're in there more than author is. And a lot of this stuff that you and I have looked at and other friends of ours have looked at, we all go, oh, we know this. This is not new. This is pretty old. Because it is. A lot of it's really old. I don't see a lot of new references in there. So I just think people have to be really careful when they look at that stuff, that they understand when did it come from.
Yeah, the leak is, again, there's interesting stuff in there, and it is insights into stuff Google uses to make its machine work. And I even believe that with enough study, people will start to really, really pick these APIs apart and figure out where they are inside Google's machine, provided they're still working. But it's going to take a long time. It's going to take a really long time. A lot of research. It's not going to come from the one leak. It's going to come from I think what you're doing, Christine, putting 3, 4, 5 different sources together, trying to find a contiguous story that way.
Well, and the testimony talks about Google developers. It's really actually interesting. They talk about quality raters and how they're used, and they talk about the data and how they use that data from the quality raters. And apparently, what they do is what the quality raters have rated stuff, and they've come to a conclusion on that test. They roll that out to developers on their boxes, and they can make their own algorithms based off that data, right? And they can test their own search algorithms. So what does this API call, which is what I know Ryan kind of thinks from our talk last week, it might be about, it might be their developer boxes and how they can simulate people doing things in relation to Google search to try to create new algorithms to test, you know, the engineers test later. So it's possible that's all these are, because I will die on one hill, and this is just my personal opinion, but it was turned in a bug bounty report a month before it was ever written about. I just don't see the corporate lawyers letting their proprietary secrets just sit there. Because it's a bug bounty report, so they would know it exists. There's no way they wouldn't know it exists. So yeah, anyway.
It's funny. I'm taking a kind of opposite way of looking at this, instead of like, I'm just like, oh my God, could you imagine having that job? To be the one who was allowed to like, tweak an algorithm on your own desktop just to see what would happen. Like, oh my God.
The document's fascinating. It was, you know, the document talks about the whole history of search from 2004-ish to like the time of the testimony around 2018. But it talks about these developer docs. And the person asking about it or talking about it is the person questioning the person at Google from Google. So they have a lot of information. They question the person from Google, and the Google person is just like, yeah, that's how we do it. Or maybe that's similar to how we do it. Not 100%, but it's close. You know, so it confirms everything. So it's not even like the Googler talking. It's like the lawyer who did all the research is talking and says, XYZ, is this true? And they go, yeah, that's true. That's how we do it. So it's a fascinating document. Everyone really should read it.
Okay, moving on. We've been
way more time than we intended to spend on the leak.
But again, much ado about something. We're just not sure what exactly.
Exactly.
Okay, so the big question that everyone's been asking since March, since September, or somewhere in between, can I or can't I recover from the helpful content update? Well, maybe you can, because Google, in the form of Danny Sullivan, is saying people who've had impacts with core ranking updates may see changes in our if our systems believe they've improved after the next broad one we have, broad core update. Google has apparently been meeting with people who were hit by the HCU, people who had large sites, who were doing well, who were actually generating employment in their communities by hiring people to run these sites, that they were getting enough traffic and, I guess, moving enough links, moving people across enough links to generate enough revenue to hire people. So Google's going to take those kind of sites somewhat seriously. And they had them, they've been meeting with them, and I don't think Google took them as seriously before as they do now, after the outrage, outcry and hullabaloo, and people actually reaching out and saying, you know, this hurt me, my family, and more importantly, employees.
And the national press picking that up and carrying those stories.
Yeah.
That's when they got really interested. I don't think they cared before that.
So, I mean, so Google's going to... This begs the question, do what to relieve what pressure, or, you know, what filter to allow which sites to recover from helpful content? As it's a confusing response, but the hope is out there.
Well, let's also clarify something too, because I had someone ask me this yesterday, and Danny tried to clarify, but it didn't come across clear. So the site-wide HCU was applied in September. And was applied in early March update. By the way, if you have been hit by these, check and make sure it's a HCU and not a core update, because almost everybody who's come to me thinking it was an HCU was hit by a core update that happened after that.
Well, yeah, in some ways, I think that was Google's bad for bundling so many things at the exact same time.
Exactly, and they did that in September, October too. They ran an HCU 2 weeks before CU.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the site-wide HCU, people have not recovered from. So the idea was they were going to move to the page level combined core update with HCU inside of it at the end of the rollout. And they did do that. But everyone thought, outside of people at Google who knew what they were doing, they thought they would take the site-wide classifier off. And those people would recover, and the new one would run, and it would take down pages as opposed to whole sites. That did not happen. The main sites that got hit, the people that are following thousands of them, have never seen one recover. And although some people have recovered by moving their site to a new domain, and we don't know if that stays, by the way, because in the past, Google has passed on the evaluations, so we don't know yet if that works. But they have recovered somewhat, mostly. I mean, they have to, they have to get their links.
That's a gutsy move for someone to do that.
But, you know, people who didn't go through Penguin might not realize, like, desperate, you know, you're down 90%, 100%. But Google back at Penguin transferred that devaluation 2 to 3 months later. So they did all the work to do a new site, and all of a sudden everything would go away again, and they didn't know why. And later, Dave and I, when we worked together on those, we figured it out. But John Mueller did admit years later that they did do that. So you just have to be careful before you do that, that you know that that's not going on. But anyway, they have not removed the site-wide classifier. Those sites have not recovered. So people are confused and going, but which one am I hit by? Well, you're not hit. If you're hit by the site wide, you're not hit at the page level, you're not hit by both. But I believe personally, in my personal opinion, there is something that broke on the site wide classifier, and they haven't been able to fix it, because we've had different. First, they said you're not going to be able to fix it. Then they said 2 to 3 updates. Now they're saying next update, there'll be recovery. So that tells me there's a process going on at Google, trying to figure out what to do about that site-wide HCU classifier, whatever it is, whether they can't remove it, whether it didn't work properly, whether they can't do something they're supposed to do. Either way, I do think there's hope, because I do think because we keep getting a progressive message. No, you probably can't recover. Oh, maybe you can, but 2 or 3 updates, now it's probably next update. that they're trying to figure it out. They have figured out that there's people that can recover. So I wouldn't give it up the ghost just yet.
So basically, Danny's promised that if you've worked on it, you've figured out what the problem was, and you've worked to improve the quality of the documents of the site, you at the next Broadcore update, which incidentally is going to happen sometime over there somewhere. We don't know
But before September, probably.
when. Probably, maybe.
Yeah, before the holiday rush,
But
usually.
the truth is, you're only saying that because this is what they've
Yes,
done in the past, not
past
because they
behavior.
actually
Yes,
have
you're
it
right.
scheduled, right?
You're right. 100%. You're right. Yeah.
So hold on, folks. Like, it's coming.
Do you
Keep
remember?
working on your sites, and you know what? While you're working on the site, diversify traffic sources. You It's not like you don't have time.
Well, it is like House Fresh, which is one of the big names that have been interviewed. They are moving reviews to YouTube. People remember YouTube is the second largest search engine in the world. And they're going to put them on video. So I don't know that you can do that if you have people reviewing product, but if you're reviewing product, you certainly can take your product reviews, put them on YouTube, and then use that as a channel as well. Definitely diversify, as Jim said. And then with you remember how Penguin ended? Remember how they ended Penguin? They're like, we're going to do a rollout of Penguin, and then everybody recovered that could recover, or some
Well,
people didn't
indeed.
recover.
The very last Penguin was the bad links get ignored, good links get promoted,
Yeah.
and you could pretty much adopt a hands off from a disavow sort of position. That was last Penguin, right?
Yeah, and a bunch of sites came back because they took off the site-wide classifier. Because Penguin was a site-wide classifier, remember? Like, they just devalued all your links. So your site didn't, you couldn't do anything. Your sites were dead in the water until you fixed them and another update ran, right?
Well,
So, yeah, so I think it has a feeling like that. I don't know that's the same, but hopefully on the next one, they'll just be kind and just remove the classifier from anyone who's done work. So.
I hope. Yeah, let's hope, because again, there are good people who had something really bad happen to them.
Yes,
After that,
very. Yeah.
there was an article in Search Engine Journal. It appeared today, and I mean, I guess it's always a good time for this kind of article, I suppose. Although this absolutely should have been done ages and ages ago. I think Web Quality has been advising people to use schema markup language for 5, maybe 10 years. It's hard to tell after you
I'm
keep
going to
saying
say
it over and
probably
over.
10 because Schema's been around, or it's been around since 2011. So
Okay, more.
pretty,
I
pretty
bet you it's been
sure.
13 years we've been telling people to do
Yeah,
this then.
exactly. Yeah.
Okay, so implement schema on your page. The today's good reason du jour, the best reason today is because it may well help you provide information to generative AI overview answers. It may get your offer, product, or what have you mentioned in one of the tiles that are going to appear between paragraphs, or it may actually push your information into the data sets
Or
that.
the better thing is it gets you 35 rich results. Let's stand out on the page.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, schema data
That's
gets
I
you rich
that's IO
results
of the user.
inorganic, and it always has. That's how you feed, you know.
But did you know that this is what's surprising about this article? Only 50% of sites, according to the common Web Data Commons, which is a research data set that most people, most companies, academics use, only 50% of pages have structured data. Only 50%.
That's, but you know what? That's
Been around
not
14, 13
surprising. It's
years.
very, I mean, what are they using as sites? Like, are they saying commercial websites?
Data Commons is a combination. It's actually what a lot of the AI companies use to train on.
Okay, so
So.
that I find that surprising, because most content management systems and WordPress and so, do it just, you know, there's plugins that do it for you, or they just do it, just create the schema data.
Yeah. Crazy, right?
I'm going to create some of the schema data. Yeah, it is crazy. And if you are an SEO and you're not pushing at your clients, you're doing it yourself, you're not serving your clients properly. You need to use schema data. You need to feed engines, as well as providing a place they can come feed in.
And what you're doing is when the crawler comes through and you designated something in the structured data, it knows it's that and it doesn't have to keep reinterpreting your site or your pages. So it's like, oh, okay, we know it's this. We store that in our little whatever. And they know it for the, they also know for the future when they return. So your schema data is super important. If I have a recipe site, it's like, these are the ingredients. It doesn't have to guess, are they the ingredients? Are they my shopping list? Are they what I put on top of the pie? Like they're literally, or they're part of my 2000 word background story. So I know these are literally the ingredients and they can pull them back literally as ingredients. And that's why they're so important.
Okay. So all those stories that we did before, I was hoping to lead up to, I want to give you this. Did you see the interview that Barry Schwartz did with Elizabeth Tucker
I did.
Elizabeth Tucker is the director of product management at Google Search. First off, congratulations, Barry. Like, getting anybody from Google to come on and to do an interview is phenomenal. Yes. That's really good reporting and good journalism. So congratulations, Barry. I don't really know if I learned a lot from the interview.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jill.
Oh, except that they'll talk to Barry.
Yeah, Oleg, and I can't pronounce her last name, unfortunately. She was very funny. Because I was like, well, it was a nice interview, but I don't think I learned much. And she says, I learned she's a very nice person and a data scientist. Unfortunately, I didn't learn anything to help my clients. I'm paraphrasing, but I was like, so yeah, that's pretty much it.
Here's some of the things you would have learned, and this is taken from Danny Goodwin's synopsis of the interview. Danny published this over at Search Engine Land. Okay, number one, when thinking about creating content, think helpfulness, satisfaction, and experience. You've got to focus on the big picture. There's a number of different signals that Google looks at. It's not one thing or this thing or that thing, or, you know, there's no golden bullet, or silver bullet. There's a number of factors. Focus on the big picture. It's not just great content or great technical acumen. It's a mixture of a lot of stuff.
That's like what Danny's been saying for the last year.
Yeah.
Feels like Google comms. And here's the list of things you can tell them.
So do you know why it took 45 days for the March 2024 core update to roll out?
They had a war room and they kept seeing things and sometimes they would get overwhelmed and yeah.
Because it was very complicated, that's why.
Yeah.
This was the biggest.
Like a nice person, but this isn't. There's just nothing in here. No matter. Barry really tried. It's not Barry's fault.
This was the largest core update to date. They did more with these updates in this period of time than they've ever tried to hammer together before, and that may well explain why there was just such absolute chaos during that 45 days and in the days following it. And then like I said in the opening, it just now sort of feels like things are stabilizing, and it doesn't feel very stable at all.
No, true. So
why did it take them a week to tell us it was over? It was complicated, that's why.
Yeah, exactly. That's pretty much the whole answer from her. It was complicated. We made changes. It was complicated. We watched the changes. It was complicated, and we made more changes. That pretty much sums up, though, the interview, unfortunately.
So, I'm sorry.
A lot of that. There's just not a lot in here that we haven't already heard 100 times.
Nope. They talk about what led to the 45% reduction in unhelpful content, and I'm not really sure, after reading it, what did lead to it.
And by the way, what is the 45% of? They have not told us that. A billion pages, a million pages, 10,000, 2 trillion? Like, what? There's 45% means nothing.
9 out of 10 Googlers say it's better than that.
Exactly. What led to the 45% reduction in unhelpful content? Was that only a 45% reduction of the unhelpful content? 45% reduction was the unhelpful content, and then the rest is helpful. I don't know, because they don't ever say. Like, I do think there's one thing that's concerning, though. And I think that we see an increasingly, and I do not think this is our reps from Google. I think they try the best they can with what they're allowed to do. I think Danny and John, I mix their names together. Danny and John, and Gary, when he chimes in, which isn't a lot, but he does put out very useful information on LinkedIn. I do think they're really trying. Oh, and Martin, they're really trying to give us information, but they do work for a multi-trillion-dollar company that's not going to let them just say whatever they want to say. And unfortunately, I think from the higher ups at Google, they have become more and more of a black box and just are refusing to give us anything. And that's like the early days, and you and I were there then, and we had to rely on like the black hatters, like who broke things and then like went to Google and said, "Hey, I broke your stuff."
Well, here's the
But
thing. And maybe it's because we were there in the early days and we're used to Google speak. I don't think they've been holding out on me personally at all. I've
oh,
been
I
doing,
do.
well, you do, I understand that.
Helpful content, really. What have we gotten that's actionable and helpful
We've
content?
gotten a great deal on what will be helpful content. I've said over and over and over again what I think would be helpful content based on what Google says is helpful content. It's not just about the content, it's about the intention with which it's written, and it's about helping move the user from point A to point B to point C to point Z on the page. It's about helping them make a purchase decision. Helpful content isn't just factual, it's literally helpful. People
John
don't
said it
come
could
to
be
a
jokes.
page to do something. Your content has to help them do that.
Yeah.
There's a number of things that would fall into this bucket they consider helpful, but I think
Again,
they've been fairly clear.
you're not giving me specifics.
You don't need to have specifics.
I
It's
know the
about what your
specifics
audience
of.
needs. It's
I know the.
much too general to give
I
specifics.
know this. Right. That's what I mean. They're becoming more of a black box. If you go back to what they told us about the core update. It's on your money or your life site. It's on this many queries. You need to check, the core ranking signals. Those are actionable things. Helpful content has not had any actionable things. You just told me 10 things that 10 other people would tell me 10 different things because that's how they interpreted what was told. We're
Sure.
not being given specific. So I have a
But
concern
I'm the one
that
with
Google's
every
wanting.
website under his belt on the ascendancy right now. I
That's
don't
not.
know
I'm
what
not
to
saying you're
say.
wrong. I'm
I'm
not saying you're
pretty sure I'm
wrong.
right about this.
You might be right about part of it. There may be a bigger part of it. I'm just saying core updates. Like I sometimes have people that tell me all they do is content fixes and that works for them. And I do technical fixes and that works for me because our sites are different
So I
and they
bet
have
you
different
you're both
needs.
right in one
Right.
way
That's what
or
I'm saying.
another. And I bet
That's
you.
what
I bet you even
saying.
more if you merged techniques, be twice as right.
Well, I already do that. And that's right. But I'm just saying with helpful content, they're not that specific.
But
It's
then, and
like
I'm
write good
saying they can't
content
be.
and
Content itself is much too general. Every web page is different. Every audience is different.
but
When they
everything that
say
they
write to your audience and
evaluate,
make it useful for them, that's about as practical advice
no,
as you can give.
no, because they have to convert everything into an algorithm, which is math, which means they know exactly and specifically what they're looking for, which means they could give us more detailed information and they're just not. So that's what I'm saying. I'm just
Well,
concerned it's
like
a black
what?
box.
Give me an example.
I don't know because I don't have information for them telling me.
But what would you want?
Let's say back when page speed was a tiebreaker, we knew that for sure, right? Because John said that all the time. They didn't say it was a tiebreaker at the query level, so most people ignored it. I did not. I got massive increases for clients, 100% increases for clients
Great.
on those, right? And I knew specifically what I had to look at: time from first byte, how the page loaded, the ad load, right? Because they told us all that, right? They didn't tell us all in one big article, but they told us in different times the things you need to look at for page speed, page load. And I could act on those because I know exactly what I'm looking at. And that's math. They know exactly what they're looking for. They know
That's
exactly what they're
a
looking for in
far
the
easier
content.
metric than it is the
Right. But
very than it comes to the variedness that comes with content.
they still have to convert it into math. So they do know what they're looking for. Maybe ranges, but they
And if
know
they
maybe I'm
were to
looking
do
for.
that, the formulaic content that you see on the web would be overwhelming.
No. Well,
Oh
I'm saying like
yes, I promise you that.
a lot of the sites I've seen that have been hit have this theme where it's all blog posts on the homepage. There's no above the fold content, right? That's probably something they look for. They're very adamant because there used to be an algorithm above the fold content, right? And you have to check for it. So a lot of these use this theme where there's just blog post, blog post, blog post. So that's probably in there. I'm not saying it's in it, but that's probably in there because most of the sites seem to have that problem. So I'm saying that there are specific things we're looking for, and they're not telling us what they are.
Well, again, I don't think that it's possible for them to tell us exactly what they are. I think they've been fairly clear. I think they've been fairly clear. And I think when they do get a little bit more specific, you have individual SEOs who take that little bit of specificity and grab it like a bone and run with it as far as they can and try to market it to everybody who will bite. I'm not necessarily sure that's the right thing for them to do. I remember when they gave us a little bit of information on how they felt about, you know, PageRank on any given document, and a little green bar in the what were those things called again? The menu that they'd have you download, the desktop menu.
I don't remember.
I forget what they were called, but they measured PageRank in it, and they showed us PageRank.
They would show you the real PageRank, yeah, back then.
And they created a monster in doing that. They created a dreadful monster.
That's not the same thing.
It's exactly the same thing. You tell people that you need an author bio. Just tell them that.
Right.
Oh my God, wait till you see what happens
bio.
Next.
Maybe
you don't need an author bio, but if you tell them they do, there will be a market for it immediately.
So we'll just agree to disagree and move on.
Mm-hmm.
We have two more stories to keep talking about.
Okay, so again, there's a number of other factors, a number of other things that are isolated in this interview with Elizabeth Tucker. It's definitely worth the read. Problem is, you're probably going to walk away going, yow, okay, I don't know what I just fully read there.
Or, yeah, I knew that, which is pretty much anyone who's been in the game for a while.
Yep. So that brings us to the question. Roger Monty article from today, I believe. Is Google working or not? Is it broken? Is it screwed up?
I think it's a bit broken. We also know that the head of the company said if they make search worse, they make more money. And then the guy who ran search was sent to the hinterlands of Google. So we could probably say there's some evidence that they have been making it worse on purpose. Yeah, you usually don't send the guy who created the entire thing and built the entire product in the company to the hinterlands if you're going to follow his advice.
No, although they're definitely going a different direction than he wanted them to go in, and that's where I think that politic broke apart.
The emails were actually, I don't think you've seen the emails. The emails were literally, I won't break search. Here's how you could do it, but I won't break it. And them saying they wanted to go ahead with it. So
as I said, I did read the emails. I was being, okay. I was, you know, typical Canadian, reserved, polite. And yeah, that's exactly what happened. Former head of search didn't want to go the direction that Google wants to go with AI. And they parted ways.
Well, not AI. This wasn't the AI part. This was where they asked him to make search worse because that increased queries. Increased queries made more revenue on ads. So they literally went to Gnomes and said, Gnomes, I'm sorry, and said, is it Gnomes or Gnomes?
Ben
Gnomes. And said they wanted to know how they could make search worse to make people query more. And if you listen to his last earnings call from Sundar, he talks about queries all the time. That's their metric. And Gnomes thought that was a terrible metric. And he said, these are a few ways that you could break search and make it worse. But I will not do that. I will absolutely not touch it. You never touch it. You don't touch search. And he was very adamant. And then he wound up going to the hinterlands of Google soon after, very soon after. So he refused to make search worse. And I get what he means. If search is worse and I do more queries, I'm going to run across more ads. And maybe I just get frustrated and I click an ad finally, right? And just the ad covers it. I'll do that. So I don't know. But they did say they wanted to do it, and they did get rid of the person who was going to block them from doing it. So it does feel like there's probably a good chance they did it. Don't you think?
No, I take a slightly different read of all of that than you do, but I don't think that they shitified search on purpose. I do think that search did end up shitified. And Google has played stupid games towards the end of quarter time and time and time again. And I think this was an example of another stupid game they played towards end of quarter, but I don't think they intended to completely destroy their engine.
Well, I haven't completely destroyed. Just make it moderately worse so people would search more.
Again,
And
Google has been known to play fast and loose with all sorts of stuff when they need to make revenue towards the end of a quarter or towards the end of some earnings period. They often did it with PPC in the olden days. So I can see that, absolutely can see that. But a long-term strategy, I have a really hard time wrapping my head around that. Well, yeah, did you see Gary E's trolling Barry Schwartz? That's really funny. So this isn't a big deal, actually. This is something that was done quite a while ago. But there was a change in the documentation of HERF HERF.
What?
Oh, HREF, sorry, HREF. It's in our notes, it's okay, so anyway, in our notes it's HERF. Okay, HREF. Okay, so there was a
Oh, sorry about
change.
that.
There was a change in the way you can you list the HREF language tag on a page. Just a little change in Google's documentation. But the fun part was they just published it yesterday because Barry's out of the office on holidays for 2 days. So he can't write about it. He must be looking at it, eyes bulging out of his head. He didn't have this
Oh
pre-programmed. No one told him it
no,
was going to happen, and he can't cover it.
I don't. Does he have access right now? I don't think he has access.
Oh no, he's
But
offline. He's
it looks,
offline for the next two for the last 2 days.
so he's offline, so he hadn't even seen it. So it was very cute little
Oh,
troll.
so
So
when he comes back to the
Gary.
desk, he's going to know that everyone knows that Gary trolled him.
I'm sure he hasn't seen it.
Okay, and you know what? This is interesting. It was done by Gary because Gary, you're right. Either they trust you or they don't. And this is how it comes down to the truth. So, we reported last week that last mod date on your sitemap is actually a very important signal to Google.
And it wasn't for a long time. We want to let people know you're not crazy. For a very long time, they said they didn't care. Now they
But
do.
here's the thing: if they don't trust that you're keeping up to date on your last mod date, then they still don't care. Either they trust the date or they completely ignore it. It's a
If
binary,
you're a
one
new
or the other.
site, make sure they trust you. If you're not a new site, it's probably not going to be that important. But
Well, in some ways, this could be how does I don't know why Google doesn't adopt Index now. I don't know why they're
I
still
know
sitting on
they're
the
still
fence with
test. They've
it.
been testing it for a year and a half now,
So
too.
this could be their sort of Index Now thing, but it's not. But I bet you it has something to do with, because last mod is all about, hey, come check me out, recrawl me now. I just changed. Take a look.
Yes.
It's the ultimate come crawl me signal.
It is.
If they trust you, if they don't trust you, they don't care. They don't look. You can change it. And if you haven't gained the trust with them, then now here's the question: how do you get them to trust you?
Just make sure it's accurate and right. This is supposed to be a quick story, Jim.
No, indeed.
We also have some big stories we missed that we still need to get back to, and we don't have a lot of time left. So do you want to go through these ones real
Where do you
quick?
want to get to?
You want to try the quick ones? See if we can do them in
Go for it.
under
Where do you want to
2 minutes.
go to?
Well, let's just do these quick ones fast. There's some fast stories that don't require a lot of explanation. So Google Local Pack photos have added labels to them. So when you look at the local pack and there's a food from your favorite restaurant, it's going to say what maybe the food is on top of it. Someone's going to write a label. The label's going to show up on the photo. So you know what it is when you're looking at the photo instead of going, what is that? And then trying to find it. So, and then there is Google fixes G4 attribution models to better associate conversions to paid search. I just have to say, how long has G4 been out and it hasn't fixed its attribution models for paid search? I don't know.
Well,
I feel
yeah,
like.
GA4 was really hoping to merge with technologies like Looker Studio and to be interpreted that way. I don't think they meant GA4 to be a standalone, but everybody, myself included, who's used to using like Universal Analytics, where it was like one desktop, one screen, all you need in one place. you know, we don't want to create these big our own bespoke analytics suites, right? So they're trying to improve GA4 piece by piece.
And most clients that actually use free analytic tools can't do it, don't understand it, never will look at Looker. So it was a big mess. But it is funny that they're just now getting around to conversion association, because they used to put it in like organic search or other channels.
A conversion is an event. Anyway, GA4 is its own little world. It's really useful, but not as useful as UA3 used to be.
Yeah, exactly. Google Search, now we talked about Schema earlier, and now has an organizational level for your return policy markup. So now you can, instead of just putting it at the product level, which is probably kind of a pain, unless you have a different return policy for everything, and most sites don't, now you can put it at the organizational level.
Just a quick note here. Remember what we said at the very beginning of the show about Christmas coming sooner than you think?
Yes.
Schema, return policy, think about it.
Get it in there. That's actually a big seller. I worked with a big commerce company, and your return policy should like be in the headline at the top of every page on the site. Like, it doesn't have to be a big bar. Like, here's what it costs to ship and our return policy.
Well, indeed. I mean, like SEO's got to remember that a part of our job is still the marketing part of the job. And this is marketing 101. Yeah. Make this information available to the customer as early and as quickly as possible. It makes them comfortable with your brand, and it gets the click.
Yeah, there's also research on the conversion rates go up quite a bit when people know your shipping and return policy immediately. And you just put it in the top of your page in the head. And if they don't, they tend to bounce because other sites offer it, especially during the holiday season. It's on every site.
Yep.
Google Maps is testing QR codes on their business profile. So I guess if you're on a desktop version of the maps, you can take your phone out and then take a picture, because you can't do anything with it on your mobile device. But someone else has a camera and takes a picture of it. So I guess you want to quickly transfer data. But Barry couldn't really reproduce it. So we're not sure it's that widespread yet.
Every boomer and older Gen Xers are grumbling about this one, of course, but yep.
It's kind of funny. I'm going to take out my camera, take a picture of my desktop. I could just share the link with myself. And go ahead.
This one gets me. Why are we talking about this? Why are we talking about this today? Again, I'm curious about this. Google, disallow crawling of action URLs, like your buy now, sign up, etc. Shouldn't this be self-evident?
Well, except that on your cart, and Barry says this in the article, Google used to like try to buy a few things. Like, they didn't actually buy them, but they threw them in the cart to test the cart. So if you do get rid of all those crawl links, they can't test your cart. So Barry suggested probably a better idea not to block that one, but to block your sign-in, your logins, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, that should be self-evident. But that's one of those little things that often gets overlooked between the devs and the front-end people. If the devs don't think about it and the front end people don't check it. So it's a good thing. Do a double check, do a crawl, see if it's there.
Until you see your analytics the first time and you see all these really weird pages with like screwy parameters afterwards. And, you know, you're actually looking at 2 to 3 times the traffic as recorded.
Yes.
If you don't want it to appear in the search engine, you don't want to appear public facing, don't crawl it.
Yeah, and especially those, because it's just a waste of a crawl. It's not going anywhere. Because they're not gonna work with the rest of your pages. Not doing your login. They can't do your buy-in. So okay. And then
this is something that I think is gonna bother a lot of people in the future if they ever figure out how they're going to do it. Google is testing organizing search results pages. And they've, you know, they've done this before, where, you know, your video and your shopping and it, but the more Google segments pages and tries to segment and put your page in this little niche or box, it always works out. The less traffic you get.
Yeah, I also don't like it. I've gotten it. It's just overwhelming and obnoxious. So
yeah,
we'll see how long it lasts. I've been testing right now.
Yeah, this is going on. It may or may not last.
It doesn't fit my intent.
It's going to annoy you.
Yeah, because it doesn't fit my intent. It's like I'm looking for a product and doing some product research this week. I keep getting those shopping filters, and then there's a buying guide, and then there's something else. I'm like, I don't need any of this. I just wanted to compare two products. I just, that's all I wanted to do. So you'll see, we'll see how long it lasts. It's in testing. So we kind of got into Google really fast and we kind of missed like the biggest story of the week. So let's get finish off with those, I
Which
think,
one
this
was
week.
this?
Apple rolled out the World Developer Content, its conference.
Oh,
And
that Siri is now
yeah.
has on-screen awareness and is kind of intelligent.
Supposedly, yes. I don't find my Siri on my Mac very intelligent, so I almost never use it. But we'll see. And they're
When
also
was the last time you talked to her,
three or four days ago.
though? Okay.
It comes on by accident all the time. And I'm like, go away. Didn't
No,
ask again.
I've noticed that Shauna, my partner Shauna's Alexa is coming on by accident a lot recently too.
Yeah. It's like,
Yeah.
why are you on? I did not ask. I did not summon you. Leave me.
Okay, so what happened at the developers conference?
Well, you kind of covered most of it. I mean, basically, a lot of times in Apple conferences, Android people going, "Yeah, I had that like 5 years ago." But they do have some new stuff. The biggest announcement, though, is they're adding an OpenAI layer between. It's hard to understand because it's between. It's not always going to be active, and it's going to be between you and another part of Apple. So it's going to be like working with their advanced chatbot to bring back information for you. So it supposedly is going to ask you if you want to use the chatbot or not. So we'll see. But the big thing about that is the OpenAI. Elon Musk said that he would not allow any OpenAI or Mac products in his facility because you don't know what happens to it when it gets over to ChatGPT. Apple's insisting that they're taking privacy, in hand, and that there's nothing that will happen. Of course, we know Elon Musk has a big rivalry with OpenAI because he's friends or frenemies now with
With Sam
Sam
Altman.
Altman. Yeah, so it's hard to know if that is meaningful,
Well,
but it would be
Elon's
important.
pissed at OpenAI because he wanted to run the company and they didn't want him to run the company, basically. He
Yes.
was he wanted to be he wanted to be Sam Altman.
Exactly. But it's
You know what
also
gets me? What's this about the Faraday cages? If you have an Apple device on Twixter property, and you got to throw it into a Faraday cage.
that's what he's saying. If they, I mean, this is only with, by the way, only with the M1 chip. So if you don't have the M1 chip, I do not, you will not be getting this stuff. I'm very thankful. Interestingly, if you see like when a release is out, like Microsoft's going to work with OpenAI, it's received really well. The Apple community, not so enthralled with this idea. So I was reading a lot of people on Twitter who were following it, and they're like, I might not do Apple anymore. So we'll see what happens. People
Well,
are
hey,
kind of.
b before you decide not to do Apple anymore, I want you guys to understand, remember an experience I had just yesterday. So, if you have a Windows desktop, you will have noticed a major update was pushed to you in the last week. Part of
Recall.
that update is the AI recording. I
Yeah.
was asked specifically, do you want us to save up to, I think it was 500 kilobytes of information off my computer? And I said no. I turned it down, but the prompt came from me. I don't know for sure it was Microsoft's Total Recall, but I don't know what else it could have been.
That sounds like, yeah, that's the 500K is pretty low because they're going to take screenshots every 5 minutes.
Yeah, so
But,
that makes me think that they're compressing the screenshots and then
oh, yeah.
disposing of them sometime later.
Yeah, but the thing is, as people might know if they listen to our last week or the week before, these are stored in plain text, which means there is no security on them. And there's also a point between that it does interact with the edge of Microsoft, which means it is exposed to the web. So it doesn't even have to be someone hacks your computer. It could get hacked there. So,
I thought it already
and it
had
would,
been. I thought it already had been hacked, and somebody
oh,
had convinced it to
might
give
have, I
personal
didn't know.
information away.
There was a researcher who did that, yes. It was a white hat hacker who tested it and found
Well,
out it was
proof of
all
concept,
stored.
eh?
Yeah, and it was all stored in plain text, and that's just the word. There's no security on that. There's literally no security at all. So I would not do it personally at all because this could all be used against you in many courts of law, divorce
Yes.
court, business court, whatever court it is, but also because it can be hacked and your information taken.
Again, the reason I mentioned it just in this specific case is before you decide to ditch your Apple device in favor of a
Oh,
Windows device,
yeah.
the grass is not always greener on the other side. In some case, the grass is
I'm
right
not
over a septic
ditching.
tank.
I do have confidence that although they haven't done it yet, that Apple will eventually roll out a, do you want this or not? Because their whole brand is about privacy and you being in control of your information. So So I'm hoping, but right now I don't have an M1 chip, so I don't have to worry because I'm only working on the M1 chips.
Okay, so I don't know if we have a lot of time for a lot of other stories. There is one that I kind of want to touch on. If you are a staff member at X and you're expecting a performance review anytime soon, because you know you might want a bonus or something to take a summer vacation, you're not getting it. You're not getting a
Yeah.
performance review. They're not ready for it. I don't know why. No one
Money.
knows why. Maybe Linda Yaccarino, who is the CEO of Twitter, maybe she knows why, but she didn't actually say.
They're not meeting their revenue targets for the quarter.
Oh, is that the
And
reason why?
yeah, and there's layoffs probably coming. And I saw some big finance guy on Twitter the other day go, "See, Elon was right. He got rid of 75% and his staff, and it's doing great." And I'm like, "You do know the company's value is down 75%, right?" So they're losing more advertisers. And Hyundai was the last big one to leave that I've heard of, but there's other ones leaving now because your content shows up next to Nazis and people just are not that, like that fond of that appearing with their brand. So
Your content
yeah.
might show up to naked breasts as well, and people seem to like those.
Yeah, we do know porn is allowed now on Twitter. So, but yeah, so apparently the guy that shows up to do the dirty work has been showing up on campus. So I'm sure I've been in those situations. They're very tense. And I feel badly for anybody who's left at Twitter because a lot of the people that are left are on those special visas where they have to be employed to stay here. Yeah. So we do have one more story I think we should mention.
Which
Two more.
is
Two more
which
quickly.
one?
Two quick ones. First, also Twitter got rid of knowing who liked your post unless it's your post or your like. So you can't look at the likes on a post anymore and see who liked it. So like when Ted Cruz was, caught, doing liking some things on the internet he probably shouldn't have been as a senator. You won't be able to see those. And he's saying that's for privacy and engagement, but I'm gonna just say my feelings and mine is he doesn't think the people that like Nazi content want you to know that they like Nazi content.
Yeah,
So
I
yeah.
think that actually makes it easier for people to track and stalk other people. But yay Musk. What was the last one that you wanted to touch on?
Oh, if you're using chatbots from Google or Microsoft, you will not be able to get any information on who won any election anywhere in the world.
That's probably a good thing. Honestly, that's
Yeah.
probably a good thing because these guys don't, the chatbot doesn't know. The chatbot's just filling in the sentences it should be filled in, and there's so much disinformation out there.
It's just kind of a bad testament to the ability to make these things accurate, right?
Well, they can't.
Because they can't, right?
So they're doing the
Exactly.
next best thing and just turning it off in
Yeah.
this incredibly sensitive place.
Exactly. I'm not saying it's bad that they're turning it off. It's a good thing they're turning it off. It's just unfortunately not a very good prognosis for the tech if they can't simply get it to say a proper election result. Those are pretty limited. You could feed it to the data set. But there's ways to get around it, so, or to hack it or to make poison it or all the other things you can do.
The last
So
thing either of these companies need, or any AI company needs, is their AI claiming that the American election in 2020 was somehow fraudulent. That's the last thing any of
exactly.
them need.
Exactly. So if you're searching on these and you're getting no result, it's because it's intentional. And it will be for any election in the world in 2024. And I don't know about going backwards if it's for every election, but definitely in the United States.
Okay, one last thing. This isn't on our grid. I am going to the Collision Conference,
I know, it's so
a
exciting.
massive web summit conference that's happening in Toronto. But you know what we learned
Yay.
this morning?
What's that?
This is the last of them. Collision is done. Collision's
Whoa.
dead. This is the last Collision Conference happening
Really?
in
Well,
Toronto.
that's sad.
It's moving to West Vancouver. It's going to be a brand new Web Summit Digital Marketing Conference 2024, 2025. So if you're thinking of coming to Canada in 2025 to go to a Web Summit conference, you will not be coming to Toronto. You'll be going to our little sister city on the far west coast, Vancouver. A beautiful space, but it ain't Toronto.
No, but I do love that area. And it's closer to me, so I might go actually go.
Yes. So, but I will be at Collision next week. I'm going to be actually. I've got a one-on-one with Neil Patel. That's going to be fun.
And
I
what
also have a one-on-one with Richard Sohner, the founder and CEO of You.com, which was the first search engine to actually try to use AI in its search results.
Awesome. And are we going to play some of this on the show?
Yeah. Well, if I
Is he
don't screw up
recorded?
the recording, yeah.
We'll figure
Yeah,
it
absolutely. We're doing this on the show. And in fact, my interview with Neil is at 9 in the morning next Thursday. So I'm going to have to run downtown, do the interview, run back up here, send it down to studio, and see if we get into the show same day.
Well, if you send it to me when you're done, I can send it over.
There we go.
And then you don't have to run.
Okay, on that, we got to get out of here. We've gone
We do.
slightly over hours. So, on behalf of Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. You've been listening to Webcology recorded live to podcast on the 13th of June, 2024. Special thanks to our sponsor, Audience Key, and also special thanks to Ricky and Brasco in the studio and Darren and Brandy in the office. Folks, be kind to each other. Rank well, have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week.
Have a great day, everybody.